Chapter 41. Dunnock Falls. The regent was not buried, but placed in an empty supply wagon after the pure men performed their embalming ritual upon his body. Shadan Cairn, as second in command, took charge of the company. Mirelle emerged from the Shalane's carriage just before dawn. She comforted Cadean, sitting by him and draping her arm around his massive shoulders. When Jaren arrived, Jen rose to leave.
"Jen," Mirelle said, "will you watch a few hours with me?"
"Certainly, Your Grace."
"Cadean," she said tenderly, "get a few hours' rest. Jen will stay with me."
"But he has watched through the night. I shall be with you."
"You have watched through the night, too, and have suffered much grief. I order you to bed. You must put your anger and sadness behind you. You cannot protect me while tired and full of sorrow."
"As you wish,"
Cadean acquiesced, barely checking his displeasure.
"If Jen will swear to me he won't leave your side until I return."
"I will stay with her," Jen promised.
"You can rest in my wagon."
Cadean rose and walked away, shoulders slumped. Mirelle took Jen's arm.
"Come, let's go pay our respects to Harrick."
Everything in camp moved more slowly than usual as he escorted the First Mother toward the rear of the caravan. People clumped together in the rain, talking in low voices. The pontiff mandated a morning fast in the regent's memory, though Jen didn't feel much like eating anyway. Near the end of the caravan, two Rugothian soldiers guarded the covered supply wagon where Ogbith lay wrapped in a white sheet with his sword laid on his breast. Ethrys sat by the body, his bald head bowed as if in prayer. Mirelle dismissed the guards and Jen turned to stand in their place after helping Mirelle inside, but Mirelle waved him up and ordered him to close the flap to the rear opening of the wagon. They sat together in silence for many minutes, Mirelle leaning against Jen and resting her head on his shoulder. Shadan Cairn rode up and down the line on his massive warhorse, spurring the numb soldiers and servants into quicker preparations for departure. The rain still fell, and there was a great commotion as soldier, churchman, and noble alike negotiated the mud and stowed equipment and tents. Mirelle did not speak until the wagon lurched forward.
"Kim Dan was here," Ethrys finally said. "The boy took it well, though I doubt he will think of much more than revenge for a good long while. He is a strong lad."
Mirelle nodded her head in agreement.
"Serena will not take it well. She had a premonition that he would die on this trip, but Harrick ignored it. He kissed her goodbye and promised he'd ride back up to the door in as good a condition as he left in. He told me that the sure word of prophecy meant the trip could not fail. He didn't realize that his name was not mentioned by the ministrant who saw this day."
"And how are you, Jen?"
Ethrys asked after a pause, eyes tight.
"I'm as well as can be expected. I must admit that I have a growing fear of what we are to face ahead of us, especially if the enemy can kill us so easily."
"That is what we need to talk with you about," Mirelle replied. "Do you want to tell him, Ethrys, or should I?"
"I will," Ethrys said. "I feel I brought this tragedy upon us. I should have never trusted it to Harrick. It has caused a ruinous turn of events."
Ethrys fixed his penetrating glare on Jen.
"What I'm about to tell you goes to no one else, not the Shalane, not Fenner, not Maywen. No one. Understood?"
"Yes."
"Very well. You must know this, since you protect the Shalane. We may have to tell Jaren, but I hope we can avoid it, since he is on day watch. Do you know the story of Ord and Yuan?"
"Vaguely," Jen answered.
"As I recall, he was the second mage king of Lalmanar. Yuan was his first queen. She was killed secretly by her sister, Adewen, who then became Ord's wife. He found out later, but she managed to kill him with the aid of some magical device."
"Yes," Ethrys said, "and the magic device was also what helped her kill Yuan in the first place. Ord loved Yuan to distraction, and it pained him to be away from her on his many excursions attempting to destroy the rebels flouting his control. So he created what was at first called the Lover's Window, a small looking glass that allowed him to see and speak to her over long distances. Unlike other similar magical devices, this one actually opened a portal between them so they could kiss, touch, and pass objects to each other.
quite a powerful work of magic which no one has duplicated since. Ewan told Adwen about the device. After Ord returned home with the lover's window, Adwen found it and used it to kill her sister. The mystery of Ewan's death was never solved, and Adwen, who had always wanted Ord for herself, became his wife after he grieved for 5 years. The device lay unused for a long while, for Ord couldn't bear the memories it awoke within him, and he hid it away. Guilt ate at Adwen, and one of her handmaidens heard her confess to the murder while she slept. The servant told Ord. Adwen found out the guard was coming for her and stole the device. She fled the castle and hid. That night, from a small room in a run-down inn, she called Ord's name, and the glass showed him in bed asleep. From miles away, she reached through the glass and slit his throat with a dagger. It took a long time to track her down, and when she was found by some pure man years later, she was insane. The lover's window was placed in a pure man's apartments and used as a simple mirror for years, until a magician of Duam's order tracked it down and took it for himself. In time, it fell into the hands of wicked men and was used in many more murders. The church finally confiscated it, but not before it became known as the Assassin's Glass. It should have been destroyed. Instead, it was locked away within the great temple at Muir Eldaloth. It was stolen recently, and no one's been able to find it. Someone killed Harrick using this glass. Someone within the camp.
Why do you think from within the camp? Jen asked. If the story is true, then the assassin could be sitting comfortably around a fire many miles from here. The Uyumark arrow would seem to suggest a dark elf or some human working with the Uyumark had possession of it.
No, Jen, Ethras said, it is in the camp.
He was nervous.
You see, it was I who stole it. It was I who brought it with us. It was I who loaned it to Regent Ogbith so he could get messages from home. Someone stole it from him 2 days ago while we were on the march.
Jen's mind reeled. Why did you even bring it? And who would want to kill Regent Ogbith?
I brought it because I needed to use it to watch certain people, magicians and evil men I thought might hinder us on our journey. As to who would want to kill Regent Ogbith, there are many answers, ranging from certain members of the Ogmerian camp to those who seek to capture or kill the Shalane by weakening the caravan.
Something about Ethris's face told Jen that this was an incomplete answer.
Why tell me?
Because the Shalane is at risk, Ethris said. And you as well. The carriage is warded against this kind of magic, so I do not believe the Shalane is in immediate danger as long as she stays in it. I can feel when a portal is opened close by, so I am relatively safe as well. But I worry for you and Mirel. Mirel will sleep in the carriage with the Shalane from now on, under the pretense of consoling her about Harrick's death. You, however, have no protection, and you cannot sleep in the Shalane's carriage without causing a moral uproar. I can help you, though. I can give you a brand that will sting you if a portal is opened nearby. As with other brands, it will hurt in the giving, but will be well worth the pain. There is a problem, however.
What's that? Jen asked.
Ethris leaned forward, lowering his voice. The other magicians in camp will know I am performing magic if they are nearby, and if they are close enough, they will know it is a portal ward branding. If they know that, then they may become suspicious. There is speculation already since the tent bore no hole where the arrow should have pierced it, and, at the worst, one of the magicians may be controlling the glass.
Jen nodded.
So how will we do this? With the Shadan in charge, the Ogmerian soldiers now have the lead position in the caravan with Rugoth's soldiers at the rear. You and I will ride near the end of the line and slip off when we can. The soldiers there will be instructed to keep silence and let us fall back. When we have enough distance and privacy, I will perform the branding. Until that time, I suggest you stay awake.
Mirel and Ethris stayed with Harrick's corpse for nearly an hour, swapping stories about their friend and laughing fondly to dispel their pain. Eventually, Ethris excused himself, leaving Mirel and Jen alone.
The First Mother leaned on him, breathing in deeply and wrapping her forest green cloak around herself for warmth or comfort.
"I hear you are to be married," she said after some time, sitting up and pushing her blonde hair behind one of her ears.
Her face was serious, blue eyes clear and determined.
"Yes." "In that case..."
Placing her hand behind Jen's head, she pulled his face forward and kissed him deeply. Whatever his conscience may have been screaming about propriety, it was completely silenced by Morell's nearness and the overwhelming pleasure of her lips on his. Fenner's kisses were a warm wind, soothing and pleasant. Morell's were a primal fire, an impassioned call to run wild from the world and dance in heedless joy around the flames. When Morell pulled away, eyes inviting and teasing, Jen sat dumbstruck between a decision to run in fear or to politely beg for more. Morell smiled at his wonderment.
"Reconsider. No one loves you better than I do."
She pulled the flap aside.
"Come, I want to see my daughter."
After helping the First Mother inside the Shalane's slow-moving wagon, Jen sat on the ledge and put his head in his hands, awareness of his surroundings slowly returning from wherever Morell had banished it to. The jarring of the wagon and the cool rain running in rivulets down his face cleared his mind. That Morell chose to confess her love in the presence of the body of her trusted and recently killed adviser seemed odd, even morbid, signalling some desperation on her part.
"Her emotions are running high, and she's confused," he reasoned. "She'll probably repent of it later and apologize. She just wants someone to care for her during a difficult time and is uncertain of herself and out of sorts."
Jen repeated these thoughts until he almost believed them, hoping he could recover sufficiently enough to enable him to look Fenner in the eye without his face betraying the thrill or the guilt. At length, viscous, sucking mud mired one of the supply wagons and the caravan stopped. Fortunately, Fenner was preoccupied with Jeff, the two of them talking from on horseback. The rain lightened to a drizzle and the air warmed, the air misty and damp. The caravan had climbed steadily that morning, and all around them hills dotted with stands of cedars or towering pines snuggled against sheer grey cliffs. Flecked granite rocks and boulders, some of enormous size, lay scattered on hills or in great boulder washes in the gullies. Clouds concealed the bald, jagged tops of the far-reach mountains they had seen from the plain, and patches of snow still clung in the shadowy recesses and cracks in the landscape. But no wind blew through the pine boughs. Mist clumped in the low places where swift streams, formed from a mix of melting highland snow and a week of rain, flowed down from the high places and pooled in troubled lakes and ponds. Rock slides had torn gaps in the blanketing fir trees. Jen feared the road ahead would prove a morass of mud and rock, though scouting reports said the road was paved in stones after Dunnock Falls Bridge. Once past the bridge, they would pass a road to the ancient and abandoned stronghold of Echo Hold, a massive fort obscured by the mountains to the east. Morell and the Shalane talked for some time, while Jen waited, Fenner joining them while soldiers wrenched the supply wagon out of the mire with the help of long poles of deadwood. The men tasked with the dirty work grumbled considerably about the mages not doing their part. But if any of the mages heard, they gave no sign that the criticism mattered. Even when the caravan finally moved, it only lumbered on for a short distance before it had to stop, where the rainwater had eroded a deep gully in the road. Tempers flared again as soldiers performed the backbreaking work of hauling stones and wood to form a makeshift bridge across the gap. The magicians, Ethris among them, huddled together and talked, faces grave. Captain Tolbrook pulled Ethris aside and visited with him briefly before coming to the carriage. Dark circles ringed the captain's tired eyes. The last few days had aged him. He acknowledged Jen with a nod.
"Jaron, I must have word with the First Mother."
"I am here,"
Morell answered through the bars before Jaron could reply.
"What news, Captain?"
"Perhaps I should speak to you alone, my lady."
"Nonsense, Captain. We are all about the same business here."
"Very well. The camp at Falls Bridge is either deserted or destroyed. Maywin says there are signs that the soldiers were there, but they are missing now.
All supplies are gone, and there was some evidence of a fight. It appears that we'll need to tighten our belts for the rest of the way.
Jen sensed the edge in his voice. It was Tolbrook's version of terrified. 100 cavalry and 150 soldiers had camped at Falls Bridge with a great store of food. That the scouts could find little trace of them was worrisome, suggesting that something had overwhelmed them and carried off the supplies. The river provided a convenient way to get rid of the dead and dying. Just below the bridge, the river poured over the edge of a deep canyon.
"Thank you, Captain," Merrell said, voice tight. "Keep me informed."
Tolbrook walked away, boots slipping and sinking into the mud. To Jen's surprise, the Shalane's wagon hadn't sunk into the muck and barely showed a trail in comparison to the others, which cut deep ruts into the earth. Another of the clever features Ethris had imbued into the wagon.
"I suppose you heard?"
Maywin came around from the front of the wagon, soaked and speaking in Elvish.
"Captain Tolbrook just left," Jen replied. "He said the encampment at Falls Bridge was missing."
"He softened it for you, then,"
Maywin said, leaning on her bow.
"They were slaughtered. The rain washed away a lot of the blood and feces, but not the bent grass and the spoor. The Uyamark carted off the supplies, and what men and horses they didn't eat, they probably cast into the falls."
"It will be a lot of work," Jen said. "And to what end? Seems they would prefer to leave the carnage to torment us."
"I don't know. Either it happened some time ago, or they had a lot of help. 250 men and 100 horses are hard to clean up or carry off. They didn't use fire to burn anything. There are places I believe they cut the horses up into pieces and carried them away, probably for food. You may see it before nightfall."
Captain Tolbrook did hide a lot.
He probably wanted to be delicate in front of the Shalane. Maywin's face settled into a mixture of exasperation and contempt.
"Why you hide so much from your women is hard to understand. Knowing the truth, even if cold and disturbing, serves one better than warm and peaceful ignorance, man or woman. You tell her, Jen. They aren't attacking this caravan for our sake, but for her and for Shatan's. But,"
and at this she moved closer and whispered,
"I think we will be in peril before the sun rises tomorrow. We will likely camp close to the bridge tonight. We should take the Shalane and Shatan, cross the bridge, and leave the road. The Uyumak have guessed our course, and if we don't deviate from it, we will be in their power. Think about it. They will listen to you."
Jen nodded. Maywin held his eyes a little longer to punctuate her seriousness and left.
"So what did your cute elven friend have to say, Jen?"
It was Fenner from within the carriage, trying to be mirthful in the worry. Jen stepped up and peered through the bars. The Shalane and Merrell sat on the pillars, hand in hand. Fenner stood by the door.
"I'm afraid the good captain delivered the most comforting version of the events he could."
Jen related in full what Maywin had told him. When done, he thought the captain had chosen the wiser path. Fenner trembled and Merrell wrung her hands together, eyes pinched. In her robes and under her veil, the Shalane was hard to read, though she huddled closer to her mother.
"Jen," Fenner said frantically, "what are we going to do? Are we going to turn back?"
"We cannot go back," Merrell said resolutely, standing and straightening her deep blue riding dress.
"The Shalane and Shatan must be wed in Eldalori Mora, and we must trust that Eldaloth will protect us for that purpose. I'm coming out, Jen. Fenner, stay with the Shalane, please."
As Merrell descended and Jaren relocked the door, the caravan started to move again. A horse was brought for the First Mother, and Jen sat behind her, contact with her, luring his thoughts back to their earlier encounter. She was all business, however, riding directly to Torbrand Cairn, who sat astride his horse at the edge of the makeshift bridge, watching every wagon wheel and horse hoof cross.
"Jen!"
he greeted excitedly, ignoring Mirel. A wild anticipation shone in his eyes.
"It seems we shall have a fight after all! Everyone is scared, but not you and I. We were fashioned for this hour. They will watch us fight and know that we, too, we are the ones to fear."
Jen wasn't sure how to respond. He had no enthusiasm for a bloody run-in with an Uyumark horde. Luckily, the First Mother dampened the Shadan's fey mood with a good question.
"Lord Cairn," she demanded, "what do you intend to do?"
The light faded from Cairn's eyes as from a child's when a mother tells him to stop playing and come inside the house.
"What choice have we first, mother? We go forward. In less than a mile we will be trapped against the river to our right and the mountain to our left and will be ripe for the killing. I will do the only thing I can, order a wall of soldiers to the left flank to protect Shertan and the Shalane, and then fight like rabid dog. I just hope those shifty-eyed magicians don't take away all the fun."
Seeing that the Shadan wouldn't provide satisfaction, Mirel turned her horse and galloped off to find Ethrys.
"I can't understand that man," Mirel grumbled. "He's supposed to be a seasoned general, and he's got no plan better than that. Pah!"
While Jen didn't voice it, he knew Torbrand was right. Their mission forced them to go onward. Getting trapped by the river played into the enemy's hands. They didn't dare split their force lest they become too weak. The narrow road and rocky terrain gave them no alternative routes, at least before they crossed the bridge. They couldn't foray out into unknown territory and mount any sort of serious attack. There was nothing to do but fortify the exposed side and win their way through by force of arms, magic, and whatever good fortune they had left. It took Ethrys telling Mirel the same to calm her down and accept the Shadan's strategy, or lack thereof. As they counselled together, Cadean arrived and relieved Jen. Ethrys had another horse brought up.
"Mount up, Jen," the magician ordered. "We have little time to finish our business."
As if on cue, a wagon near the rear of the column sank into the mud, horses labouring. In the confusion and messy toil that followed, Jen and Ethrys gradually worked their way back toward the rear before volunteering to go search for more poles to help lift and extract the wagon. They rode a little way back and quickly skirted behind a large boulder. Ethrys wasted no time. Jen removed his shirt, casting about for any stragglers that might observe their clandestine meeting. From his voluminous cloak, the magician retrieved the thin silver blade with which he had performed the other brandings. With confident strokes, he cut a runic pattern into Jen's chest before chanting and heating the blade to sizzling white. With it, he sealed and cauterized the cuts. As Jen slipped his shirt quickly back over his head, a shout from the caravan told them the column was underway again.
"Listen, Jen," Ethrys said as they rode slowly back. "If a portal is opened near you, the branding will sting. But it won't help you know where the portal is. To be safe, sleep with your back against something, a corner preferably. This will limit where the portal can appear in relation to yourself and make it easier to find. Remember that a portal goes two ways. You can use weapons to good effect."
"You think Shertan controls the mirror, don't you?" Jen speculated. "Is that why you're taking such care to protect me?" Ethrys returned a slight nod that left no doubt as to his opinion. They rejoined the line of muddy, grumpy foot soldiers and weary horses. As they marched, the rain gradually lessened and finally stopped, inspiring a general cheer from everyone. The River Dunnock roared somewhere ahead of them, and as they turned a bend around a hill, it came into view, wide and swift, rushing down from the mountains to their right and forming a small lake against walls of broken granite. Straggly pines grew in these cracks, and over the years their efforts, combined with those of the ice and wind, had dislodged granite chunks that had fallen down the steep slopes and formed a rough stone beach around the water. Less than a mile across the water ahead of them, the mighty Falls Bridge spanned the river just before it emptied into the canyon. As they pressed forward, the clouds broke up, sun streaking into the valley in wide, yellow rays. A rainbow formed in the mist from the falls beyond the river, arching above the bridge as if it had provided a guide for the builders to follow. Jen realized his imagination of the bridge had greatly missed the mark. In contrast to the sturdy, shard-spanning bridges of Rugarth, the Falls Bridge was chiseled into delicate, thin patterns. Expertly tooled clouds decorated the top of the arch, making the falls mist seem like rain falling from them. The builders had carved the curved supports so finely, they seemed like a frail web a stiff breeze might ruin. As they traversed the rocky edge of the lake, the ground became less muddy and more firm. The steep hill to their left gave way to a deep, green meadow, a welcome relief from the rocky, uneven landscape they had grown accustomed to in the previous days. Here Shadan Cairn ordered a halt, calling an early end to the day's march. Jen knew the meadow would be the most defensible place for miles, providing a clear field for approach and a place where the generals and warlords could put their horsed knights to good use. The clouds continued to break and flee, and soon the camp was astir with relieved, happy conversation. For the first time in days, someone laughed sincerely enough to be believed. Looking ahead, Jen saw the Shalane's carriage opening and Fenner emerging. He rode up quickly and helped her up onto his horse. She kissed him long enough for it to be embarrassing.
"Isn't it beautiful?" she said, eyes alive.
Jen shoved aside a tinge of guilt, noticing Mirel nearby. Fenner smiled.
"This almost makes up for the days of rain."
"Almost." Jen pointed out the bridge to her and her mouth fell open.
"It is the most magnificent thing I have ever seen," Fenner proclaimed. "The Shalane should see this. It must have taken ages to make. It must be magic."
"It did take some time," Jen said, enjoying Fenner's fascination. "But I'd bet the Amun Mu, the giant builders of the first times, had a hand in it. They were massive, yet gentle. Created by Elder Loth to build mighty structures and cities, including Elder Lurimora. They did the rough crafting, and dwarves provided the finer detail. Both races, unfortunately, were destroyed in the First War. Men have tried to imitate their work with magic, but I don't think such craftsmanship will be matched again."
"Do you think Shadan will stop and let us see it?"
"I think you'll have to settle for a quick glimpse as we ride over it. His mood is hard to read, but he expects battle soon, and so do I. I don't think he'll allow much time for sightseeing. And speaking of battle, I would appreciate it if you would catch a quick dinner and sleep in the carriage with the Shalane." Fenner gave him another kiss.
"As you wish, my lord."
The afternoon waned, and the meadow filled with tents and cook fires. Breezes took up the smell of the fatty meat and tender vegetables, wafting it around the camp, setting mouths to watering. Dried bread, meat, and fruit filled the belly, but didn't lift the spirits, and as mealtime neared, a feeling of celebration charged the air. Despite the sunshine and the promise of a warm meal, Jen couldn't relax. He caught Maywan out of the corner of his eye, scowling as she used to do when Jeff would howl out a tune into the unfriendly night. With a quick word to the Shadan, she ran toward the hill, ducking into the forest to the side before beginning her ascent. Torbrand watched her go, staring eagerly at the high hill as if impatient for an Uyumark mob to pour over it so he could stain his blade before nightfall. Ethris and Mirel disappeared into a tent as soon as they could erect one, and Captain Tolbrook and Warlord Maelsworth stood at the edge of the meadow pointing to various spots on the field as they planned their strategy for a battle they could sense coming but had no proof of. Jen didn't know how many knew of the slaughter that had recently occurred a scant mile or two away, but a force nearly as large as the one now encamped had been crushed and carted off with little trace. Jen received his food shortly after servants carried away meals for high nobility and the pontiff. In short order, he and Fenner sat on the back of his wagon, feet dangling over the edge. The food, while not fair for the table of a king, felt like a feast. With Fenner beside and the blue sky above, Jen could almost forget the danger all about them and have a moment's peace. But Jeff, bouncing up in his green coat and yellow hose, ruined whatever good feeling Jen had coming. Jeff's resilient cap feather thrust stiffly into the air as if it hadn't seen one drop of rain.
"Good evening, Miss Fairdale and Lord Blackshire," he said, hat sweeping close to the ground, but not close enough to get dirty. "How do you like the weather now?"
"It has brightened up nicely," Fenner said.
Jen took a big bite of a potato, knowing he'd have ample time to chew it.
"Indeed," Jeff returned, face aglow. "It is, as I said, a ray of sunshine in the middle of the storm. What a paradise we have found in the midst of our gloom. Why, I'd break out into song if I didn't think Maywan would put an arrow through my throat before the first verse was over. But what a song it will make! Imagine the symbolism, overcoming hardship, pressing on in our duty through dark and distress, striving ever upward to arrive in a blessed land in the mountains where sunshine and peace prevail. I can feel the words coming already. Tell me what you think. Rain and mud, dark and fog, don't look down, press on, press on. Drenched grey wood and loomy bog, don't look back, walk on, walk on."
"We didn't go through a bog."
"At least technically," Jen interjected through his mouthful of stew. Jeff turned indignant.
"Surely, Jen, you of all people realise that this song would not be historical but metaphorical in nature.
I am trying to represent the journey of life, not merely our travels.
Forgive me. Muse on.
While hard the way, steel your heart. The blessing comes, though long concealed. The rain will stop and clouds depart, the earned reward to you revealed. For every step of our distress, for every hope and smile undone, God gives to us a sweet redress, where rivers flow through fields of sun.
Jen watched, bemused, as Jeff, lost within his mind, waved his arm around to a tune only he could hear. Fenner covered her mouth to hide a grin.
I've got it, Jeff finally announced.
A deep thud shook the wagon. Jen dropped his plate. Something big and heavy bounced and skidded by, carrying with it flesh, blood, and shards of wood as it rammed into the wagon two ahead of his, before landing with a heavy splash in the river. Jeff fell to the ground, hand over his head. Jen jumped down and drew his sword. Shouts and screams from the camp drew Jen's eyes there. A narrow path, strewn with carnage, showed where the boulder had impacted and hurtled along its deadly course before reducing three tents and a supply wagon to rubble. Eyes darted about for signs of an enemy, but there were none. Shouts of "Catapult!" ran through the camp as Torbrand yelled excitedly for his troops to prepare for battle. Jen knew his duty was with the Shalane, but Fenner sat unmoving on the wagon.
"Jeff," Jen said, giving the bard a kick, "get up! You and Fenner stay in the wagon and keep your heads below the sideboard. I must see to the Shalane."
The notion of protecting Fenner infused Jeff with enough iron to get up and help her into the back of the wagon. Jen turned and sprinted forward, watching the sky. Ethris emerged from his tent, Mirel close beside him, and gathered the mages to him, barking orders.
"Another one!"
someone shouted. Jen looked toward the sky. Arcing over the hill was another boulder of impossible size. Jen knew immediately that a catapult could not throw something so big, so far. Men scattered as the massive stone impacted near the front of the caravan, tearing through a line of cavalrymen, struggling onto their mounts. The horses screamed and men died as the boulder crushed their ranks. Jen arrived at the Shalane's wagon to find Jaren standing on top, watching the hill closely.
"This is Mikik's work," he yelled. "We need to get the carriage back to the tree line."
"We can't go without the rest of the caravan," Jen shouted back. "Splitting the Shalane away from the main body could be what they want."
Jen stood at the side of the carriage, eyes fixed on the hill. The mages spread away from Ethris at his command, forming a line along the centre of the meadow. Ethris raised his staff when they were in position, and they began to incant in unison. As they did, another boulder arced over the hill. Jen readied himself. It careened toward the middle of the caravan. Just before it could hit, a faint wall of air formed ahead of the magicians, and the boulder slammed into it with terrific force. The mages nearest the point of impact fell to their knees, but held the wall. The rest of the dark guard surrounded the carriage as the Shadan shouted for the caravan to move forward toward the bridge. Most of the horses, however, had been unhitched. Torbrand ordered all empty wagons to be left and for all to press on. Slowly, one wagon here and another there, the caravan sluggishly moved. Another boulder slamming into the magical defence tore Jen's attention away from the road. The magician there had fallen, exhausted but not dead, leaving a large gap in the wall. A howl, distant, deep, and loud, reverberated through the camp. With an earth-shaking step, something unfathomably huge crested the hill. A gigantic armoured head rose first, followed by a body equally protected. It was muscular and was at least 15 times taller than a man. Its crude armoured shirt had been fashioned from a collection of breastplates, greaves, and helms, all from Rugothian soldiers. Only its own helm had been tailored for it, the rest of its ensemble dangling hodgepodge about its body. Dark grey splotches spread irregularly over the dun skin of its muscular arms and legs. A heavy brow shadowed deep, large eyes. Cries of terror filled the camp as it bellowed and pounded toward them with steps that set the ground to quivering. So heavy was the armour upon it that it slumped and walked slowly. Only its arms and lower half of its legs were free of protection, and as it strode forward it loosed another boulder it had reserved, clenched in its hand. Horses pulled at their restraints and screamed. Again the magical shield held, but already the magicians seemed spent, all leaning heavily on their staves and labouring to breathe.
At the Shaddan's command, some 20 mounted knights with lances charged forward, not armoured due to haste. They formed a wedge, riding fast. Other knights prepared themselves with all the celerity they could manage, and the foot soldiers sprinted to form ranks behind the magicians. Upon seeing the mounted assault, the giant stopped and watched them come with a dull curiosity, mouth hanging open stupidly. To Jen's horror, it simply fell forward onto its stomach when the wedge got close enough. The impact on the ground forced Jen to steady himself against the carriage. All but four of the knights were crushed underneath the behemoth's weight, the other four shaken from their saddles. Horses screamed again, and several bolted, pulling stakes and running wild through the crowd. The Shalane's carriage moved forward, Alni fighting to keep the horses under control. Slowly the giant rose to its feet, chest and legs spattered with blood. Several corpses hung from its armour, and those it wiped off with a broad sweep of its hand. With another howl it came forward, steps thundering ever louder. Jen swallowed hard as it turned its gaze toward the Shalane's carriage and stepped toward it. The magicians dropped their shield and pulled back into the ranks of the infantry, all save Ethrys, who remained rooted as the monstrosity clanged and lumbered toward him. Ethrys lifted his staff high, and a bolt of white light streaked from the sky and hit the giant's helm. At first nothing happened, and the giant continued unabated, coming closer to the carriage and pulling away from Ethrys. The spot on the monster's helm where the light was focused turned orange, as the white beam heated the metal. The giant screamed in agony, a sound so terrible that the horses on the Shalane's carriage bolted, throwing Jaren to the ground. Jen sprinted and managed to grab hold of the bars on the side and hang on. The driver soared at the reins, trying to pull the horses in, but the animals edged closer to the giant, swerving away from the river. With massive hands, the giant grabbed its helmet, working frantically to pull it off its head as the first volley of arrows from the archers peppered its massive face. Ethrys fell to one knee, staff still aloft. The giant continued to bellow, unable to pry the helmet off. In unquenchable pain it fell to its knees, soldiers diving away as it sank down. The horses pulling the Shalane's wagon, feeling their danger, veered straight toward the river, scattering the soldiers in their path. Smoke poured from the gaps in the giant's helmet, and it pitched forward, finally flinging the white-hot armour from its head. Jen flinched helplessly as the discarded helmet slammed into the back of the carriage, pitching it forward, his vision blurred as he struggled to hang on to the bars, the momentum finally pulling them out of his grasp. He flailed as he flew through the air, hearing the heavy splash of horse and carriage moments before finding himself in the stiff current of the cool, dark water. Using all his training to stay calm, he fought off the disorientation and found his way up, cresting the water. The Shalane's carriage drifted slightly ahead of him, floating lightly on the river. Due to its size, the current pulled strongly upon it. The horses and driver floated dead in the water nearby, wagon tongue broken. With all the strength he could summon, Jen swam for the carriage. The Imtith told him the Shalane was alive, and only slightly bruised. He knew the carriage had magical properties to protect its passenger, but Jen was still surprised to see that it appeared as if it hadn't even been struck. It also didn't seem to fill with water, and it outpaced him despite his best efforts. The falls roared ever nearer, carriage drifting straight toward the steep drop. Jen glanced back at the caravan. The entire line was in chaos. Most of the dark guard rode along the shore, keeping pace with the carriage in the water. A single magician astride a horse flanked them, incanting. Behind them, the situation deteriorated rapidly. While the giant lay vanquished, a large group of Uyumak poured over the hill toward the shattered camp. Shatan, Merel the Pontiff, and others galloped along the road away from the meadow. A cracking noise turned Jen's attention forward. A small island of ice entrapped the Shalane's wagon. The magician who cast the spell fell forward on his horse, energy spent. Jen scrambled onto the ice and slipped and slid to the carriage door. The great bridge loomed above them, casting a shadow across the water in the late afternoon. The booming of the falls deafened him. High above them, the Uyumak ran across the bridge toward the fray. They didn't seem to notice the carriage below. "Shalane!" Jen gasped as he reached the carriage door. "Are you all right?" The Shalane came to the bars. "Get me out, Jen!" she yelled. "Get me out!" Jen could barely hear her over the rumbling of the falls as he fumbled for the key at his neck. As he pushed the key into the lock, the ice to his left cracked, a large chunk sliding away. Jen pulled the key away.
"Jen, what are you doing? Get me out, please."
Jen assessed the situation while the powerful current continued to break the ice. While they weren't far from shore, he knew they could not swim to it. The Shalane had never been allowed near deep water in her life, and her thick robes would weigh her down in the water.
"Jen!"
she screamed. A crack formed at his feet as the entire ice sheet floated toward the falls. Decided, he thrust the key in, turned the lock and jumped inside, pulling the door closed behind him. He had to trust Ethris's craft. The Shalane grabbed him.
"We have to get out!"
"We can't! We'd never make the shore. The falls are too close and the current too strong." Jen searched the wagon, hastily arranging the pillows and blankets that lay strewn about. Luckily, the large chest carrying the Shalane's belongings was bolted to the floor. Working quickly, he ordered the Shalane to lie in the pillows, and he wrapped her in every soft thing he could find. Before he could finish, the carriage tilted forward, throwing him against the front wall, the bundled Shalane pinning him to it. He wrapped his arms around the screaming Shalane as the carriage fell, tumbling slowly, end over end.